believe it. The American Ninja Warrior podcast starts now. And the American Ninja Warrior podcast always feels bigger when we reach the national finals. Akbar, you and I are here to talk about it.
It's here, baby. And it's here.
Well, what a night it was. As always, it just goes to show how unpredictable American Ninja Warrior really is. And I want to start off with some of the falls. The weatherman, the guy who's been the last man standing.
Tough.
Going out on the double dipper. A shocking early exit.
Well, Matt, that was difficult to watch. Joe Morawski, we were super shocked by that fall on the double dipper. But you know, I always say this, big-time players make big-time moves in big-time moments. That time, it just got the best of Joe Morawski.
And Flip Rodriguez.
And Flip. I mean, we were like, whoa, but this is probably the hardest we've seen the national finals in a long time. The 10th season, we stepped it up. These ninjas, they've been getting better. All year round, they've been getting better.
And Travis Rosen, of course, had the fall. We did want to give you an update. He ended up fracturing that ankle. Oh. I've been in touch with Travis. Going to have surgery on it, but optimistic he's going to make a return. So that was on the negative side. On the positive side, though, we saw some new class ninjas flexing, including the kid wrapping it up at the end there, just flying through the fastest time to that point we'd seen.
Well, Matt, we saw, of the four 19-year-olds we saw hit a buzzer and qualify for the national finals, we saw three of them hit a buzzer. I mean, so that was pretty impressive to see the young guys in. So it was really like the young guys were in and the old guys were out.
That's what I was saying. It felt like there was a little bit of a change.
There was a shift. Yeah, there was a shift.
And it was. Look, by no means are we counting out these Joe Morawski. Obviously, the weatherman will be back. I'm hoping Rosen will be back. But man, to see some of the older guys struggle and these young guys who we thought, again, in city qualifying and city finals, maybe they're just getting by on adrenaline. Yeah. They don't appreciate the moment. But now they've had time to think about it. Spotlight's brighter, $1 million on the line. When I thought they might crumble, instead, they stepped up.
Man, it's hard for me to wrap my head around this idea. It's a saying, out with the old, in with the new. Out with the old, end with the new. Can you imagine some of the guys we've been leaning on?
And by the way, old guys, we're not saying out with you, okay?
No, we're not out. But, I mean, these young guys, they really pushed them, and we saw that. I mean, I think Gray was a great example. The kid, Matisse Awadi, was another great example. We saw so many young guys just step up and respond to the idea that this was the hardest national finals. We changed the configuration. We added more new obstacles that were harder. But you know what? I tell you, they had a great first night because these young guys, they didn't really experience Vegas like we've had it in the past. It was a cool 84 degrees in the desert. Yeah. In the summer. That is unlike anything we've ever experienced.
Cool is a relative word. I was still 84 sweating.
84 degrees
but
is still
I'll tell
pretty cool.
You who was cool, and that's going to be the guy who's our guest today, who's been, you know, we just have such a privilege of telling these amazing stories, and his story of generosity is truly remarkable, and he ran with the shirt that summed it up, share your spare. And the story of his generosity, particularly at the age at which he made his generous donation, life-changing donation, is remarkable. That's why I'm so thrilled to sit down with this guy.
Yeah, I gave him the nickname Nifty Shades of Gray, but we're going to learn a little bit more of why he's Gifty Shades of Gray.
Gifty Shades of Gray. Akbar, nobody does nicknames like you, and nobody does interviews like you and me together with our guest, Austin Gray. Well, it's really an honor to be sitting here with a guy who is certainly one of the breakout stories of the year. But after last night in Vegas, he's now one of the breakout stars. Austin Gray, thank you so much for sitting down with us on the ANW podcast, my friend.
Thank you, Matt and Akbar. I'm super excited to be out here.
I can tell, man. You guys definitely brought the youth to Las Vegas. We saw it all throughout the season in the qualifying. We saw it in the finals, and you brought that same charm to Las Vegas. Were you nervous on the big stage?
No, it didn't feel real yet, actually. So when I was warming up and getting ready, I kept looking over at the course and thinking, wow, this is good practice for when I compete on the show. You know, I really didn't feel like it was real yet.
Well, here's one of the things I liked is despite having very solid performances in Minneapolis, both in qualifying and city finals, you earned your way to Vegas. You didn't hit a buzzer. until you get to stage one. Now, stage one took out some giants. We saw Moravsky, Flip Rodriguez, Travis Rosen. As you're sitting there watching them go down, having not hit a buzzer all season, what's going through your mind?
That, you know, mistakes happen to people. I didn't let it psych me out, you know. Watching, you know, Joe fall was an eye-opener that, you know, any obstacle can take you out, but I wasn't worried about it because, you know, mistakes happen to the greats too, so I wasn't nervous. It's just a ninja course.
Yeah, and he's one of the most consistent Joe Moravsky ninjas. I mean, it was shocking to me, and I could only imagine, you know, at your age. Give me your age again.
22.
I mean, just can you imagine?
Well, he just turned
22 years old. I mean, and
I barely remember that. He's less than half of me.
Right? You're in your rookie year, and you see one. To me, it's the equivalence of seeing, like, LeBron James doing something really, really bad and falling. You're like, man, and I'm up next after LeBron going down? And you didn't have nerves at all, huh?
No.
Well, let's get to it then. This is the real heart of the story and the thing that made us really want to sit down with you. You said this is just a ninja course. And at 21 when you were competing, or 22 now, for most people that would be huge. But for you, you've truly learned the meaning of life when you saved one of your friend's lives by donating a kidney to her, Kaylee Adams. So can you tell us, how does this come about that you were 21 when, I mean, this was just months ago, that how do you at that age come to do something so selfless?
Well, it's kind of funny that it goes back before that. So when she had that transplant done in high school, her first one, when she was looking for a donor, I said that I would do it, but you have to be 18 to donate. I think I was a sophomore, so I was like 16. So I would have been willing to do it then, but I just wasn't allowed to. So she ended up finding a donor and then needing another one. And I came through like I said I would, and did it. It wasn't really a decision at all. It was more of a reaction to someone needing help than deciding to help.
Where do you get that from at 16 years old? You and I, we had a chance to talk right after your first night. You had a lot of success. And you told me that it was like not a thing. But that at 16 years old, that's the age where you're really self-absorbed. You're thinking about yourself. You're thinking about, you know, your
future.
Well,
most of us are, not us.
But you weren't. You were thinking about the life of a friend. What happened in your life to make you get to that point and make that decision?
I don't know. In high school, I started off really sort of on my own, playing video games, not really doing a whole lot, not outgoing, and started looking around and seeing that the happiest people in high school were the ones hanging out with their friends and doing things, and not necessarily partying or anything like that, but they were spending time with people that they enjoyed with. So, you know, that really, as soon as I remember the moment I realized that, I remember it sitting in the hallway. And that's when I decided, like, yeah, I'm going to start trying to make new friends and going out and doing things for people and with people. And that was really when everything started to get better.
So and how long had you known Kaylee?
Since the fourth grade.
Since the fourth grade.
Yeah, so I moved to Longmont in the fourth to start the fourth grade. So
and
that's,
you guys were, like, acquaintances in class. It's not like you guys hung out every day in elementary. You guys had been familiar with each other growing up in life, and then you got to this point and you guys got a little closer. Is that right? In like middle school, high school?
Yeah, I mean, we never really hung out in high school either. Very much. We talked, but she was just someone I knew, really.
It wasn't so someone you just knew,
yeah,
says, I need a kidney. And at 16, you're so selfless as to say, I'll do that. To risk it. Were you brought up religious?
No, not at all.
And what were the values you think that were instilled, or do you credit your parents, or is this something that you just kind of learned again the way you did with friends? Because again, I can't credit you enough. As Akbar said, kids that age are usually so self-absorbed, only thinking about themselves. And this really is a remarkable thing to hear of your selflessness and generosity. I can see how humble you are. You're a little awkward talking about it. But for us, we really want to give you the credit. And for people at home, I'm sure they're wondering, how could they raise a young man like you?
A lot of the credit definitely has to go to my parents because I'm pretty much nothing without them. But I feel like I learned a lot of these lessons on my own also. You have to... And I think that's partially, you know, them letting me go out and learn my own lessons and not trying to walk me through life. You know, they let me sort of, you know, make my own mistakes and learn from them. And that has to be part of what led me to where I'm at. So, but I don't know. The selflessness, I really don't feel like I'm that selfless sometimes. But other times, like, helping people is just a reaction for me. I never really decide to jump in and help. Like, there's this story that I feel like is way cooler than donating a kidney, but a lot of people don't know about. So I was in Arizona going to the Grand Canyon, and we were on our way to go skydiving. And we had to drive from the north rim to the south rim because that's where the airport was. And on the way there's a van in front of us, and it blew a tire and flipped sideways and slides off the road and rolls a bunch of times. And stuff's flying everywhere, there's glass everywhere, and we were right behind it. And I was like, we have to stop the car right now. Like, I was looking for my phone. Before the car was done moving, I jumped out, and I was like, calling 911. That's when I realized I have no idea where I'm at because I'm in Arizona.
Right. Yeah.
So I found the nearest person next, like, also going to the car with me, and I just gave him my phone and was like, tell him where we're at. And I ran over to the van. It was sitting on its driver's side, so the passenger side door was up. And there was just one lady in there, and it was like the best worst-case scenario for this lady was an off-duty firefighter came with an axe, like, lucky. Right. So we gave her a shirt through the door to like cover her eyes. So we cut the windshield open, and I had to climb on top, which was the passenger side, and pry the door open, climb in through the top, and help this lady out like through the windshield.
Oh wow!
And then the engine was still running. There's like smoke and stuff everywhere. So I had to like cut the battery terminal to shut the engine off because everything was bent. Yeah. So I had to like cut the battery.
How
out.
Old were you?
This was like a year ago. I was like 20.
20. Okay.
And yeah, so then they said her ID and her medication, her glasses and stuff are in there. And this was like a van that was like a mini RV. So there's just stuff right. thrown everywhere. So I was looking for it. And then they told me her propane tanks were leaking. So I was like, all right, found enough stuff. I think I got two of the three items I was looking for. I don't remember which ones.
At any time, were you concerned about an explosion happening?
No, not really. I mean, I was more like concerned for her. And they had an off-duty nurse also show up. Like I said, best worst case scenario.
Right.
So she was getting helped, and then emergency services came, and I found the person that had my phone. And
I'm pretty sure this is the origin story of Superman.
No, but I'll tell you what's crazy is that our conversation that we had in Las Vegas, and I can see it even as you're telling this story, even as you're being asked questions about, you know, you donating your kidney to Kaylee, you can see how uncomfortable you are. And you told me, you was like, you almost didn't tell this story in your submission video about on American Ninja Warrior because you didn't want to be held as a hero and you didn't necessarily see it as heroic. You just thought, it's just something I do. And I thought to myself, when you're telling me this in Vegas, I'm like, what?
Well, like, to me, you know, and again, you know, when we say the term hero, like, we want to fully acknowledge being a hero doesn't mean you're perfect all the time. It's not as though you're this shining beacon. To me, being a hero is the one who's uncomfortable with these decisions, but makes these important when you're faced with it. You know, the hero is the one who, despite the fear, despite whatever concerns you have, still does it. That's far more heroic than someone who's just like Superman, who's invincible. You're human. You gave up one of your kidneys for a friend. You put your life in risk for this lady you didn't even know. To me, those are the heroic moments.
You know,
and you've done it too.
Well, I tell you, I'll add to this. My coach used to say this, and I think coming up with this may be the definition for being a hero. But he says to play football, you have to have no regards for personal safety. You just got to be reckless. And what you've done, what you've exhibited, is no regards for personal safety. I mean, hey, I'm going to lose a kidney. Hey, I'm going to go into a car that's got a leaking propane tank, the battery, and there's smoke coming out. And there's no regards for personal safety. You're genuinely thinking about the other. That right there is a hero.
But I do want to say, I want to make this important point, because I think this is something you're, and right now you're wearing your shirt, the Share Your Spare shirt. And one of the messages you've said is talking about being a living donor. And the fact that what's remarkable is, well, it certainly is, there is risk associated with it. As a doctor, I can tell you, you only need really 85% of one kidney. So you're set. You're good. And I do want to encourage people, while it is risky, you really can make a difference for another person if you have that courage. So when you, I have a friend who's a transplant doctor. He recommends UNOS.org, United Network of Organ Sharing. For you, you just found Kaylee, but we talked about this, who actually engineered the transplant and coordinated everything?
Yeah, so I went through UC Health, University of Colorado.
Whoop, whoop! That's where I did my internship.
Okay, Matt, man.
You know, my dad's a professor there. That's why I'm giving it.
Okay, all right, okay.
Yeah, so I went through them the entire time, and right. It was great. I felt like I was, you know, being I was the priority. They always asked me what my opinion, if I had questions and how I was feeling about it. And I felt like I was the priority there. So it was great. And no fear really going into it. I remember Operation Day, I was excited.
Wow.
Just not really afraid at all. And really to follow up on what Akbar was saying, the main reason I didn't feel like I was a hero and didn't really want to talk about it in the submission video was I feel like it's something that it might be... I feel like it's a bummer that it's a heroic thing.
Right.
Because I feel like it should be done more often.
Wow. You know,
there's I think there's 100,000 people on kidney transplant list or more waiting. And, you know, it shouldn't be this crazy thing that someone donates a kidney. I feel like it should happen 100,000 times so that we can get all those people kidneys.
Share your spare.
Matt, I had this exact conversation with my wife after our conversation. I just walked away. You remember this conversation. I mean, I was blown away. I went and had this conversation. Like, I genuinely met a guy who is the epitome of being humble. And you know, I've always said that humbleness is not something you can say about yourself. It has to be bestowed upon you. And you get that distinction.
You mean you can't go around going, I'm the most humble person
I know. No, it doesn't work. That's actually arrogant. but you, I mean, I'm just blown away by the idea that you think that that should happen all the time.
Well, I love the
and
message.
That, and that idea is message. Very, very difficult if you think about it. There are a lot of people out there who have the ability to maybe even make that decision and maybe are stopped by the people around them. Were you stopped by people around you that say, no, that's your kid. You save it for somebody else maybe later down the line, kids or something like
Definitely.
That.
Definitely, yeah, that exact reason. People in my family, some not really my friends, but I think it was people in my family concerned. Also, there are other people in my family that thought I was doing it just so that I looked like I seemed like a good person. Like I was trying to compensate and make myself look like a good person. And I thought that was kind of a silly argument because at the end of the day, I still like donated the kidney.
You donated a kidney.
I mean, and to your own admission, you weren't even a popular kid. You stayed at home. You were recluse. You were playing your own video games. So it's not like you didn't care about, you know, the opinions of others.
So, and for those at home, take us through from the surgery, the recovery process until when you could get back to training, just so people understand what it was like for you physically.
All right. So I had surgery February 8th, and initially the pain for the first probably 5 days was way worse than I anticipated. They did not explain.
Oh, Kaylee, it better be a good Christmas gift this year.
They did not explain really how much it was going to hurt. And it was partially because of how athletic I am. Uh-huh. I have a lot more core tissue and nerves and stuff in that area. And so it took me longer to get out of the hospital than most people. Couldn't walk for the first 30 hours or so at all. Initially it was rough, but then the pain started to subside faster than I thought it would. So it kind of evened out. I think 3 or 4 weeks later, I was able to hang on a bar, just hang. Couldn't
do pull-up. We're just going to hang after surgery, right?
Wow. That's all I could do. I think that's when I started driving too. It took me 3 weeks to start driving again. And about a week after that, I did one pull-up. So I think it was 4 or 5 weeks later, I did one pull-up. That's where I kind of started. And then the 8-week mark was where I was allowed to lift more than 10 pounds. Wow. So I wasn't allowed to really do anything up to that 8-week point, engage my core at all. So then, as soon as I was allowed to start doing things, I had 7 weeks and 2 days until we filmed Minneapolis qualifiers.
Wow. Whoa.
So I had 7 weeks to
so
go.
So I could get in ninja shape in 7 weeks and 2 days?
So, and the...
You weren't supposed to laugh that hard, Akbar. It wasn't that funny.
No.
So you had seven weeks and 2 days.
And 2 days.
So, and the real driving motivation and the thought I had in my head pushing me while I was training was, not only do I have to train and get back to where I was, everyone that's competing has been training this time. Like, they're progressing, and I have to catch up. So I've got ground. I have to be pushing harder than everyone else to try to not only catch up to where I was, but then be stronger than I was in those 7 weeks.
What did you do in those times where you had to play catch up? Because not to mention, you had to still go through rehabilitation. 8 weeks was just you kind of getting back, getting healed. You don't want to pop the stitch. You have to go through your muscle walls. Then you have to start rehabbing your core muscle. That takes some time. How did you do both rehab and train at the same time?
Well, I never did core exercises. Like, I wasn't banging out sit-ups and V-ups or anything like that. I didn't do any exercise like that while I was before Minneapolis. It was all slowly building up like deadlifts and barbell lifts and things like that where your core has to hold that weight, but you're not like going through range of motion with it. So just building up that static strength. And I definitely noticed that in Vegas because when I finished stage one, my most sore muscle group was my core, by far. I wasn't out of breath.
Hitting a buzzer had to make it feel a little bit better.
No, it was great.
Your arms weren't
everything.
Pumped out. It was,
no, I wasn't.
Your abs
pumped.
Were pumped out.
My abs from just kicking and swinging, on, especially on that last obstacle, twist and flyer, double twister.
So let's talk about Ninja Warrior. How did you first discover American Ninja Warrior?
I had seen the show probably back in middle school, early high school. Mm-hmm. But my senior year of high school, I joined a climbing team. That's when I really started, because I hadn't been athletic at all up to that point. No sports.
Really?
No. I was playing video games, building computers. That's what I was doing. So I started climbing, figured out, oh, wow, I love this. So I joined the tryout for the team. And Ian Dory ended up being the head coach that year.
Wow.
So, you know, ended up with a really, really great climber.
And so this is really 4 or 5 years ago. So Ian was already on the show.
No, that was his first season.
That was his first season.
Was that season six?
So I think six five. Was his first. No, five. Because that was five. Caldeiro and that was like Caldeiro's
season
first appearance.
Yeah, okay. That was my first season as well.
Yeah, so it was, I remember when he was telling us about like the first time he went ninja training, like with the pack, you know, when it was really born. I remember seeing Brian Arnold in the gym and thinking like, oh my gosh, that's Brian Arnold. Oh my God. And now I go to his house every week and train. Like it's really come full circle. But I got into ninja when Ian started competing, and I watched him on TV, and then the next day went to practice and he was making me do pull-ups.
Was it tough for you? Did you have raw talent? Was there something that was there? I know that there was a passion that you liked rock climbing, but did they identify that, wow, this guy can climb, he can move on the
rock? Yeah, it was both. My dad was a gymnast in the 80s,
Don't make it sound like it's that long ago.
But that was back when that was like the Wild West of gymnastics, when you could really come up with your own technique and crazy skills, and stuff was still being invented. So he was.
So you have it in your genes.
Yeah. So having that, I had just this inherent body control that I didn't know about because I'd never done sports. So I was very good with the body control and air awareness and just naturally. And then as soon as my climbing season ended, I started doing gymnastics with my friend Nick, and we started going, and I learned a backflip and that day. And then the next day I learned
it. Wait, in one day?
Yeah, it took me a day to learn a backflip.
You learned a backflip in one day?
Yeah, standing backflip.
He's looking at us though as if like, yeah, why?
Because you've been talking about trying to do
I want to learn how to do it, but I'm afraid.
If you did it, I think the Richter scale would go off. If I did it, I would definitely break. So you clearly really had this skill. It's amazing that growing up you'd never really explored it.
No, not at all.
Until you're 17 and you start climbing.
Yeah.
And then get into ninja.
When you were playing video games at the time, were you fat? Were you out of shape? I mean, clearly you're probably out of shape because you didn't do anything, but I mean, were you...
I don't think I'd consider myself ever really out of shape. Okay. I mean, compared to how I am now.
But you play video games.
Yeah, I'm just one of those weird
young
people.
Young metabolism, yeah, Akbar.
But so let me give you a little rundown of my diet before I was an athlete.
Oh,
so,
boy.
So I worked a 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. shift at this assembly clean room. And I'd get off work in the morning and I'd drive to Walmart. I'd pick up a 2-pound bag of Swedish fish and probably some Monsters or some Rock Stars and some ramen noodles if I was feeling fancy.
High sodium, high sugar.
Yep,
okay,
yep.
Got it.
Uh-huh. And I'd go home and I'd, you know, I would work like 3 days in a row and then have like 4 days off. So with 4 days off in a weird sleep schedule, I could basically stay up however late I wanted. It wouldn't be weird. So I think I played World of Warcraft for 62 hours straight one time.
Okay.
62 hours without stopping.
Wow.
Ate all the Swedish fish, you know, Monsters fueled by ramen. So it was...
If I'm not mistaken, my math is not really good, but that's like 2.5 days.
It's a while.
That's closing in on 3 days. Four hours short.
Yeah.
3 straight days. Yeah. That's sleep deprivation. That's like, I think people in Korea have died playing video games. Seriously.
No, I know. Somebody just died recently.
Yeah, so that was like a regular thing for me. I'm also a very competitive person. So when I was playing, you know, Call of Duty and World of Warcraft and these games, I was playing to be rank one in different aspects of the game. I remember in Call of Duty in Free For All, I was rank one in the world for like 4 or 5 weeks.
Wow.
You know, like I do things until I'm the
best.
Now,
you don't know video games.
No.
But there are millions, and I mean, tens of millions of people who are playing these games. To be number one is truly remarkable. I mean, you have spent a lot of time playing video games.
Yes. Yeah, I was very good at it.
How are your grades?
They weren't amazing. You shouldn't do that, guys.
To all the kids out there, please listen to Austin Gray.
That's
so You know what? This is what's interesting to me. You were a guy who was very much a loner. You make this decision to find friends. You make this decision to lead a healthy lifestyle. When you go into the ninja community, which we've always talked about is I think, unique in anywhere, not just sports, but anywhere. What was it like for you going in there with Ian and now being a part of this community since you've started training and now since you've started competing and having some success? How has this impacted you?
When I started climbing, the community really surprised me. And it's actually, the ninja community is very similar to the climbing community that aspect, where everyone, you know, supports each other. But just ninja takes it to a different level. And now that, you know, people are recognizing me and I'm working with kids, it was a very unique situation when the Minneapolis City Qualifier episode aired, because that Monday morning we had a camp at my gym. So these kids came in and they met me and I hadn't aired yet.
Right.
So, you know, I was working with these kids and coaching them, and then they went home and watched the show, and there I was, ran a full story. So, and then they came back to camp on Tuesday and just excited to hang out with me because they
were like, and this is a Warrior Playground, and is that in Longmont?
Yeah, it's in Longmont. Okay. And, you know, just it's moments like that that, you know, ninja is really been worth it to put in all the hours training just for crazy moments like that.
What's been the craziest moment as you approach this new celebrity lifestyle, being on TV, being watched by millions and millions of people?
The craziest, like, celebrity moment? It was after a Wolfpack Ninja Tour, so it hadn't been aired on TV yet, but during finals, they introduced all the finalists, and Noah Kaufman told the story of how I was going to donate my kidney. I hadn't done it yet. This was in November. And so he introduced me and said I was going to do this, and it was great. And then I competed and ended up getting eighth in finals in pro, which was crazy. And then probably a few weeks later, I was out getting food, just, you know, wearing a hoodie, nothing that says my name. I can't see my face or my hair. And these two kids walk up to me like, "You're Austin Gray, right?" I was like, "Whoa, what? How did, like, my hood was up, everything?" Right. And they're like, "Yeah, you're going to donate your kidney, right?" I was like, "How do you remember that?"
Wow.
So just these two kids I think it was at Noodles, just caught.
And now that's been magnified.
Sniped me, man.
Well, for the record, Ed, you have purple hair. Is there a story behind the purple hair?
Today it's purple.
It's
been blue, it's purple, been blue, like some superhero shades. Jimmy Rahm would be proud. Is there a story? Is there any reason that you did it just for looks, or is there anything behind
it? Just for fun. So Taylor Green, competing on American Ninja Warrior Jr., mm-hmm. I train her. So I'm her coach. And I train her for free, which is different. We'll talk about that in a second. But basically, her mom is a hairstylist. So her mom has ideas for hair color and how to do it and what to cut. And
Dan Yeager's going to be jealous.
Yeah.
Because his isn't too far away from Longmont. Yeah, he's going to be recruiting you.
So, yeah, she just, you know, tries new things and different things.
Which, by the way, a testament. When I walked in here, I started talking to Austin. And before he said anything about himself, he goes, "I can't wait for you to see Taylor." He was talking about Taylor Green, who's going to be competing on American Ninja Warrior Jr., which you'll get to see it this fall on Universal Kids. But again, a testament to a guy who's never makes it about himself. But tell us more. So you were saying you train her for free. It sounds like there's a story there.
So I was training her at a gym that ended up closing. And I thought to myself, you know, if I knew how much talent she had. She's a gymnast, and she was able to pick things up so quickly, and she worked ridiculously hard. And I thought, if I stop training her, it's like a disservice to this sport. Wow. Because I know she's going to grow up and be a star. I could tell from the moment that I started working with her. So we started going to a climbing gym near the gym that had closed. So we started going. I took her climbing. She'd never been rock climbing before. Just amazing at it from the get-go, as I expected. And then it started one day a week, turned into now it's like two. And now I work with her pretty regularly. And I've never charged, because I feel like she with the talent she has and how hard she works, she deserves to be trained.
Wow.
I don't feel like they wouldn't have to pay for that. And there's another kid, Zach Holman. You know, he's another one of the same cases.
I'm writing these names down, Mark, because I have a feeling we're going to be knowing.
Look for these
them.
Guys. Yeah, so he's in the older group. I think he's 13, 14. And we just had a workout the other day with Zach and Taylor together. And they elevated each other to a level that I had never seen before from kids at all.
You know,
working so hard.
I was going to say that is so impressive, because that's what these kids are going to remember as they grow to become American Ninja Warriors at a full age. They're going to remember the people who invested time in them, their mentors. And I think we can all look in our lives and say, mm-hmm. who are those mentors that helped push us past the days that we doubted ourselves, that we were insecure about our abilities? And for you to step out and help the next generation and to do it for free. You're saying it on this podcast, just so you know, you're going to get a lot of calls after
Warrior Playground, folks.
Warrior Playground. Play. Hey, Austin Gray doing it for free. Well, hold on. Well, that's, manage your time.
That's one of the things we've always said about American Ninja Warrior, and that we learned. I learned in my first season when we had a boot camp. And this was before there were obstacles in backyard. Only David Campbell had it. There were no obstacles anywhere. And the thing we saw was ninjas get better faster together than they do alone. And I think that's something that this community has really embraced. And for you, again, at the tender age of 22, to have such maturity is remarkable. But I want to know, when the episode aired, we talked about the kids who saw you. What feedback did you get from people who watched your story on TV? Did anybody reach out to you or share any stories?
Oh, man, I got a lot of messages when the episode aired. The one that probably stood out the most, this mom messaged me saying that both her boys, two young boys, I think she said it was 4 and 7 years old, have a rare kidney disease that will develop into focal segmental glomerulosclerosis, of what Kaylee has. But they're stable now, but they're in the future going to need kidney transplants. So, and they both know it. And they loved the show before they saw me. So they were able to instantly relate to me, and they loved it, and they were cheering for me. And now they want blue hair. And just reading messages like that was so cool.
Well, what a testament to the power of the show. Because we think, of course, of Kenny Nimitalo, whose daughter Hazel was born, wouldn't have gotten out of the hospital, congenital nephrotic syndrome, would never have gotten out of the hospital had somebody not seen the episode of American Ninja Warrior and donated a kidney. And we saw this show has the power, and it's not the show, it's the stories. And it's Kenny and his wife sharing that story. And I think you sharing your story along with Kaylee is going to save lives.
I think it's going to have a major impact. And I think you won't really know the impact until maybe even next year. You may not even know for another 2 or 3 years, where you're going down somewhere and you're saying, hey, I remember you. You helped save my kid's life because this person watched your show. And that's the magnitude, where you could be in a random location. You just won't know. And I mean, if you just think on that for a little bit, that there are millions of eyeballs watching this show every Monday
night.
Or
even you give people hope.
Yeah, the hope, like, man, like, there are people out there, like, just your shirt and looking at your shirt, the same shirt that you wore in Minneapolis, share your spare. It's so catchy that you remember that. Like, oh, yeah, share your spare. You know, I think about the kids programming. Sharing is caring. Right. I mean, that's pretty cool, man.
So for those, again, like I mentioned UNOS.org, you went to University of Colorado. Is there a place you recommend for people who are interested in being, we call it live organ donors. Mm-hmm. And it's something people don't think about it. Usually they think about donating organs when they pass away. But the reality is you can make a difference while still being alive. Is there any place in particular you recommend people go to get a little more information, learn a little more?
What I did when I first decided, I filled out the questionnaire, was I just Googled it and I just read all the links I could. Right. I didn't go to one place. Right. I read as much as I could about it. So it was, I spent a lot of hours.
Was there anything that made you nervous though? Going, oh boy, this is serious.
The only thing I really had to change was because ibuprofen and Aleve mm-hmm. are heavy on your kidneys. You're not supposed to take that regularly if you donate with one kidney. And I was still tumbling as a gymnast, and I would have the worst leg pains in the world tumbling. And so I would take just absurd amounts of ibuprofen every day. So as soon as I filled out the questionnaire and decided to do this, I started tapering my ibuprofen off until I wasn't taking it. And that was interesting, because I started finding these nice like little injuries like in my shoulder and my elbow that I had been covering up for months and not noticed. Right. But that was really it. That was the only...
Can you drink like soda and stuff like that? I mean, how does that work?
I can if I want, but it's mostly
he eats healthy now.
Yeah, it's just you have to drink more water than you normally would just to make sure, because I'm at a higher risk of dehydration and it's more dangerous.
Okay.
But if you drink water, you can, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll ask the resident doctor here, because I remember as growing up, my parents would always say, don't drink a lot of soda. I mean, till this day, I don't really drink soda. I stopped drinking soda in the seventh grade. But one of the things I heard was, it'll destroy your kidneys.
Well, it's more the sugar. Sugar is the worst part of the sodas. Yeah. Your body should be able to process it. And caffeine was slightly a diuretic, which will again runs the risk of dehydration. Yeah. You should be drinking water. You know what moment I want to know is the moment you come to after the surgery, and the moment Kaylee comes to, and you realize, at what point do you kind of have this reunion with her, or at what point does she know she's going to be okay? What's that like when you get a look at each other and go, we did this?
Well, we were definitely still heavily under anesthetic when that happened.
Which makes it even more fun.
What so were you guys saying?
The one thing about my procedure and Kaylee's that's unique is very rarely does it happen at the same hospital. Usually they take a kidney out, they package it up in, you know, on
the
ice.
Igloo and cooler.
They send it to another hospital to have it transplanted. Our rooms were like on the same floor and it happened at the same time. So when she came out, I told them to roll us into the same room. So we were hanging out next to each other. She was passing out and I was passing out intermittently, but we were able to hang out like right after the procedure ended.
Yeah. And, you know, it's cool because watching the video, you get a chance. If you didn't get a chance to see that, you could see you guys coming in and seeing each other and your fist bump each other and high five. And it was kind of one of those magical moments. My mom's like, man, whoever captured that, I mean, that was great. And probably you didn't know that it was going to be shown on TV years later.
I was guessing it would.
Months later.
Yeah, that's right. Months later.
It was my mom coming in clutch with the video there. That was great.
What went through your mind, though, when you saw she's going to be okay?
I don't know. Going into the whole thing, I had pretty strong faith that the transplant team knew what they were doing. This is pretty routine for them and regular, so I wasn't surprised. I was happy that, like, it's awesome, it's been done, but I feel like I still don't grasp the concept that, like, I'm missing a kidney and it's now in Kaylee. Right. Like,
I don't see that when you see her. It's like, dang, you got my kidney.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know it, but it's like, I don't know, I can't quite comprehend
how
it.
How could you? A part of you is keeping her alive.
A lot of days I forget that I've even done, like, I forget that I have one kidney. It doesn't affect me at all, so a lot of days I forget. Yeah, I actually have a picture of my kidney. You want to see that?
No, you don't. Let me see.
Yeah, I do.
Like the real thing?
I had the surgeons take one.
Is it bloody?
A little bit.
Well, it's probably going to be.
A little bit.
They don't wash it off for a photo shoot.
They don't wash it off for Instagram? I want to see this. No,
Akbar's taking a look, so that's it.
Yeah. Oh,
there's his kidney.
This is a real kidney.
That's it.
That's very healthy-looking kidney. That is
apparently
remarkable.
Apparently, it was 30% larger than the average kidney is what I was told.
It really is remarkable. So, look, we've talked a lot about the kidney, and your story is so important, but I do want to give you credit for Ninja Warrior. So, this season, you come in as a rookie, 21 years of age. What was it like for you getting to finally compete? Akbar is still staring at your kidney, by the way. You okay?
Bro, his kidney is outside of his... How do you even transition after this?
That's why, you know, again, let's make the point here. This young man on February donated a kidney to save a woman's life. Now, cut to, he hits a buzzer in the national finals mere months later. That is a medical miracle, and it's a testament to your generosity. But again, I do want people to take away this message. It's possible to share your spare and go on and be a ninja warrior.
And do anything really that you want to do. It doesn't slow me down. It doesn't affect me at all.
Wow. A couple of days after the Super Bowl, he's in the surgery room getting his kidneys, and it's like laying right on top of your stomach.
Well, that was Kaylee's stomach in the picture, but yeah, they were adding it to Kaylee. Yeah.
Right?
That's her fourth kidney, by the way.
Yeah.
They don't take your old ones out.
Yeah.
You know, what is it like running then, seeing Kaylee on the side? I mean, for us, it's so emotional seeing, but for you and for her, what's that like when you're, like, we're both here, we're both living?
So my first run, Minneapolis qualifiers, I remember starting. The second obstacle went slow motion. I was in the air for like 15, 20 seconds, and then I blacked out for the rest of it. And then I remember missing. I remember I came to right as I missed the 14 and a half foot wall. Yeah. That's what
he
I remember.
Went for the mega wall.
Gave a great effort. Blazing speed too. You were going really fast. So that's probably why you blacked out, because you're going so fast.
So I didn't realize I didn't know what my time was until the episode aired. Of 2 minutes 39 seconds is when I finished the battering ram. Joe's winning time was 2:38. So, I mean, I could have been up there if I had not missed.
Let's face it, in stage one of Vegas, you ended up as a rookie with the fifth fastest time overall.
Overall.
I mean, at that point, look, you might be confident in your abilities. You might think that you can hang with some of them. But when you do that, this proves you belong. What was that feeling like going, man, I've bested a lot of great ninjas?
Yeah, it was nothing. I can't describe it, and nothing's ever going to top it, I think, unless I hit a stage four buzzer. But I remember in the stage one run, I got on the propeller bar, and I had to take an extra ride around, and it was a slow one. I was like, oh, no, I don't. And I'd been watching people time out all night, and because I think I ran like 65th or something like that. So I'd watched a lot of people go. And so I got off the propeller bar, and I was like, I got to make up time. We got to go. We got to get moving. So I ran, got on the double dipper, went right away, landed in a stride, ran right into the spider wall. Mm-hmm. I think the only obstacle I stopped before was the razor beams.
Yeah.
I stood there. I took one breath, and then I was like, why am I taking a breath? I can just go.
I don't need it. I'm in shape.
Just went, and I went through that, didn't stop, right into the last obstacle, and just I never stopped. I remember doing it. I thought the timer was broken behind the cargo net because it wasn't telling me how much time I had left. And
that's how much time you had left. So for those who don't know, it only counts down for the final 30 seconds.
Yeah, so I thought it was broken and wasn't telling me how much time I had left, so I was just going as fast as I could. And it turns out I had plenty of time left.
You're an explosive athlete. Because I know I read somewhere, because I'm thinking about how fast you were going through that stage one, but I read somewhere that you have the world record or have the world record for the biggest box jump for 62 and a half inches. That's NBA type hops.
I did a 62 and a half inch standing box jump.
You could jump on top of Barclay Stockett's head.
Yeah, like, we joked about that. I've done, Jake Murray's shoulders are about that high, so I've done standing box jump up on landing on his shoulders.
No, you have. See, this is the type of athleticism. A guy who goes from playing games for 62 and a half hours to then going to jump for 62 and a half inches. That's impressive.
Well, and that's a message I think that so many people at home probably need to hear too, is so often people never find what they're good at because they don't give it a chance. Right. You might have stayed, look, you were incredible at Call of Duty, but to know that you had this athleticism, this undiscovered athleticism that you never would have found had you not made that decision, and this incredible generosity within you. And I think that's another message for people at home. We often hear so many people say, I could never do that.
Yeah.
You know what? Start. Because it starts with one step. And you may not be able to do a backflip in your first day, but what we've seen is there are so many ninjas who get better just by working hard.
And it's the commitment to excellence. I mean, and with that commitment to excellence, I got to ask you, what's your ranking now on Call of Duty?
I don't touch Xbox anymore. I don't have time for that.
You're all Ninja Warrior.
If I have time to sit down and the only show I sit down and watch is American Ninja Warrior. But anything else.
We love hearing that.
If I have time to sit down and watch something, I have time to be rolling out.
By the way, we will pull the curtain back here. Today is the day we just found out we were nominated for an Emmy.
Yeah.
Is when we're recording this.
Yeah.
And the reason we are is Akbar and I like to think it's us, but it really is the stories of the ninjas, stories like yours, Austin, the stories we get to tell that I think make people love this show. So as you get ready now to come into your next season, as you're training, how is it going to be different for you now having one under your belt?
There, now that I know what the mindset is like going into a Ninja Warrior run, that was something I couldn't put myself in training. I had no idea what it was going to be like. I didn't know what the pressure felt like and what it was. But now that I know, I can try to attempt to put myself in that mindset in training, which is difficult, but I can do it. And then just the training regimen. I'm just smarter about my training now. Mm-hmm. At Warrior Playground, we have a full fitness center inside, so I can do regular workouts and then walk outside and hit rungs on the salmon ladder. So I can do these really cool hybrid workouts where I'm doing obstacles and then I'm doing deadlifts. And that's something that we've really developed at Warrior Playground into something amazing that obviously is showing results, because I was able to go from operation room to Ninja Warrior run in 15 weeks.
I could tell you something right now. Warrior Playground is pumping out some real athletes.
We're doing our best.
I want you to role play with me for a second. Next season, our 11th season, you're a ninja warrior in whatever city. You make it to Vegas. You conquer all four stages. You win $1 million. What are you doing with $1 million?
All right. Probably going to buy Warrior Playground from Sam.
Turn into a businessman real quick.
Probably going to buy the gym, but just let him keep doing what he's doing.
Right.
And then keep I'm going to be back the next season. Like, that's...
And so you're just going to go for the next million?
Yeah, just there's no reason to stop in my mind. Wow. I would be on American Ninja Warrior if there was no money, mm-hmm. and if there was no airtime. If I got on set and they told me, yep, you're definitely not getting aired, sorry, dude, but you can run the course, I would run it because that's where all the ninjas go to show to figure out who's the best. Who's the best that season.
Right.
And like I said, I'm super competitive. That's why I do things. I want to be the best. So I'm going to run at American Ninja Warrior because that's where we find out who's top dog, mm-hmm. who's got it that
Speaking
season.
Speaking of that, you got to run with your mentor, the guy who really got you into this, Ian Dory. What's it like when you look up to this guy and all of a sudden, and Brian Arnold, these guys, you're now on the same course as them?
That was such a crazy feeling. It's still, I don't know, just watch. I remember watching the episode where Brian fell on, was it the last move on Flying Bar?
Yeah.
On stage three. I just remember that so vividly. And then I'm like going to his house and training. And then we're flying to Vegas and we're talking about how we're going to run stage one. And I'm still like, that's Brian Arnold. It's less so with Ian because I knew him before
right.
Ninja Warrior. But it's still like I'm talking with these guys and figuring out how we're going to run this course and what the best ideas are. And it's just, it's mind boggling.
You know, it's crazy that you get a chance to learn from veterans like that. You know, in my rookie year, I remember there are a lot of different players that I had to watch growing up. But I had a chance to play with some veterans. And you can pattern your game after people. But I don't know if that happens in Ninja because everybody's so different. They have different backgrounds. Do you pattern your game after a ninja that you've watched beforehand? I know you've worked with Ian Dory, but do you pattern your game after anyone? Is that something that happens in the ninja community?
Yeah, it does. You definitely find out what your strengths are, and you find out what other people's strengths are. Like someone that isn't a rock climber doesn't want to watch how a rock climber runs the course because we might do something that requires more grip strength, which we can accommodate, but other people can't. So we can go for different moves, and then other people... I'm trying to think of another example that rock climbers wouldn't want to follow, but
parkour,
something like that. Yeah,
they're more aggressive.
You know, you want to know what your strengths and weaknesses are, and find people like that. So Jake Murray, I train with him, and he's helped me immensely throughout this season. Mentally, mm-hmm. Training. I train with him at Bart Copeland's gym,
mm-hmm.
Watching him, he's one of the few people that I will absolutely 100%. Use the advice he gives me for a course. There's some people, they'll tell me, you don't want to do that. You want to avoid that. And I'll be like, okay, you have fun doing that. But if Jake says something, it's generally like, yeah, that's the way to go.
Well, that's what I love about Jake. You know, he's known, I think, more for his antics.
Yeah.
But he really is a serious competitor so gifted.
He's up there, I think. If he can figure it out in Vegas, he's gonna win it. I think he's strong enough. I think stage three is gonna be his home.
Wow, really?
Whoa. Okay, okay.
I love hearing that.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what you're gonna do on stage two, man. Yeah,
he's got it. I think my home is stage three also. Like rock climbers, that's just where we hang out.
Yeah.
Like courses that take a long time and are more strategic and challenging versus going really fast. Like, I'm good at going fast, right. But I'm great at hanging for a long time.
So let me ask, the video games, now, World of Warcraft, very much, there is a lot of strategy in there, a lot of thought process as to raiding parties when you're taking down a level 99 dragon or something. When did you find any of that strategic thinking helped you at Ninja Warrior, any of that visualization? Did any of it transfer, or was it all just wasted time?
I didn't learn those ways of thinking through video games. I think I naturally have that thought process.
Okay.
And I was just applying it to
video
games.
I was trying to justify my video game
playing. Oh, sorry.
Where I'll be honest. I was hoping for a life raft.
My dad messed me up as a kid. He would tell us that that video games would spoil your brain. It would spoil your brain. And so I never got into it. So I kind of missed that. I played a little bit of Tecmo Bowl, a little bit of Madden, but that's it. That's all I really
know.
So
when you're not training, when you're not coaching, what do you do for fun?
That's a tough one. Sleeping.
that I can relate to.
Yeah, I mean, a typical day for me, especially in season for Ninja Warrior, it looks like wake up, go to the gym, do a quick, like, I'll get on. I love indoor rowing. Guys, if you want to condition your body, indoor rowing, getting on those.
You talking about the machine that you just pull like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, that gets you going. So I do that most mornings. Physical therapy, that's shoulders. That's the other thing. Ninjas, injured shoulders all the time. Yeah, it happens so often.
Yeah.
So make sure you take care of your shoulders. No imbalances. I had seriously bad imbalances about 6 months ago, and I found a physical therapist that like really knew what she was doing, and I coach her kids.
So really being proactive to prevent injuries.
Yes. Yeah. So I was able to fix the imbalances, and I also like just maintaining those things and just knowing how, you know, different. I'm probably gonna get my personal training certification and, you know, go back to school at some point for exercise science. And so that's something I'm passionate about. Not everyone has to learn all the what four muscles are in your rotator cuff. Not everyone needs to know that, but it does help. And I think it's helped me a lot to know those things and be proactive and train. But when I'm not training or coaching, probably still playing video games, but not for, you know, 60 hours straight. I'll probably play
and not for the number one ranking.
Two. No, right. No, I don't have time to invest for that anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell you one thing. I've been inspired by your story. I really have.
Thanks, man.
You really are the epitome of, I know you don't like this word, but I'm going to say it anyway, of a hero. You also embody what it means to be selfless. And so I appreciate you sharing your story. It's been amazing. But I do have to put you on the spot real quick because you're a young guy, and young guys have to be put on the spot. Give me your top five ninjas. I know
top
there are
five.
A lot of ninjas, but give me your top five.
Like favorite or what I think who are the best?
Who are the best? And of course, I will say this out loud. I know there are a lot of different ninjas, and you probably haven't seen everyone, but I'm just putting you on the spot right now. So this doesn't mean that someone else is not good. Go ahead.
All right. So number one, I'm going to say is a tie. Drew and Joe. Okay. They're up there.
Drew and Joe Morawski. Okay.
And then Adam Rail, for sure. I've been training with Adam. He's just off the charts explosive. And then Jake. I think Jake's up there. And then number five, hopefully me.
Yes!
Hopefully me. You know what? And I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that. That right there is the sign of success, because most people are afraid to put themselves in that position because they don't want the expectation. I like that. We're going to expect
it's
big
a perfect blend. You have a perfect blend of humility and confidence. And I think it's served you very well. And we want to give you a chance now. So Warrior Playground, if people want to come get coached by Austin Gray in the purple, blue, whatever color hair he's wearing, how do they find you at Warrior Playground?
Warrior Playground, we've got an Instagram, just Warrior Playground.
Okay.
The website is www.warriorplayground.com. Super easy to find. It's in Longmont, Colorado. Pro ninjas, if you want to train there, I live less than a mile away. Okay. Hit me up. Stay in my guest room.
Oh, nice. That is so ninja.
Yeah.
Where people will crash. You guys open your, not just your hearts, your homes to these people.
Josh Levin stayed in Colorado, stayed with me for a few days, but he was in Colorado for 2 weeks to train for Vegas.
And he stayed in the guest house?
He stayed in my guest room.
Man, I never got an invite to the guest house.
Dude, let me know. You can stay in my guest room.
And how do we find you on social media, Austin?
I've only got Instagram right now. That's just austingray.ninja.
Well, so you know, first off, I have to say this. This is how you know we are getting old, you and I, Matt. He only has Instagram. He didn't say Facebook. He didn't say Twitter. I'm pretty sure he's getting ready to start a Snapchat.
Wait, does he have MySpace?
No, he doesn't. Do you know what that is?
I know what it is.
What is it?
Oh, I know. It's like baby Facebook. It's like early in the
baby
day.
Facebook. That's like the Pony Express to us.
Oh, it's a baby Facebook. Yeah, I know. It's
like almost Facebook.
So again, Austin Gray, we can't thank you enough. Share your spare. We want to encourage people to look into what he did. Again, United Network of Organ Share, UNOS.org. Google it. Do research. You can be a living donor and a ninja warrior. This guy, I think you said it. I mean, what a combination of humility, confidence, and for Kaylee and for so many, you know, whether you like the term or not, you really are a hero.
Yeah, to whom much is given, much is required. And I truly believe the best of us must help the rest of us. And you did exactly that. So thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your story, even though I know you were a little reluctant to doing that. But thank you for sharing your story because you've inspired millions. Thank you.
Austin.
Austin Gray.
No. 50 Shades of Grey.
No. Nifty Shades of Gray.
Nifty Shades of Gray.
Austin, Nifty Shades of Gray, a wonderful guest on the American Ninja Warrior podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Still shocked at seeing his kidney. That was a little gross, but you know what? We learned so much from Austin Gray.
Well, you learn about generosity, and you learn again what a difference you can make in someone else's life through extreme acts of generosity, but through small acts too. And even just for a kid like him who started off playing video games and now he's transformed himself and made this choice to help others and inspire others and to run with that shirt, share your spare. Again, we talk about an American Ninja Warrior. So often it's not about what happens on the course, it's about what happens off of it. And those are the stories that matter.
And what I loved about this interview too is the same type of conversation we had after his Vegas run that came through here. On this podcast, you really got the idea that he didn't want to be held as a hero, that he was truly a humble guy just doing this because he had compassion and love for his fellow classmate. And the fact that just even learning that they weren't even the best of friends.
He's like, changing lives.
You need help? I'll help you. That right there is a model citizen.
Well, I will use the word hero. And speaking of heroes, we now are next week, we're going to have this second half of stage one where some of our biggest heroes are going to come out. And I know I can't wait to see Barclay Stockett and Abby Clark, who was a revelation.
Jesse LeBrec.
And of course, Flex LeBrec. I think the women, we've had it. Jesse Graff 2 years ago broke through. Last year, it was Alyssa Beard.
I think we're going to get one. Matt, we're going to get one or two at stage. Too.
Well, we're just seeing it. I think the women are really progressing at such a dynamic pace. I can't wait to see some of the strong ones. I know Meghan Martin couldn't get through, which was a bit of a surprise. I thought this was going to be her year. This course, you could take nothing for granted. And I know we've also got the Battle of the Beards.
Yes, some people the are Battle talking, of the
you
Beards.
Know, Ryan Stratus, one of the OGs, a guy who's been doing it every season for 10 years. And Brett Sims, a guy who actually started before Ninja Warrior even existed. Those two are going on with the beards on the line.
Somebody's beard's coming off. I'm not sure who it is, but somebody's beard's coming off. I can't wait.
And more importantly, we're going to see who moves on to get one step closer to a shot at $1 million as the finals of American Ninja Warrior roll on. And that's the American Ninja Warrior podcast. Remember, it drops the day after every episode of American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, so tell a friend, share it, whatever it is. I want you to rate us. Make sure you let everyone know about this American Ninja Warrior podcast.
You can be a ninja spreading the word on
American Ninja Warrior,
the podcast.